Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, our first podcast of the 2026 baseball season. And since we're both doing it during the day and we're not absolutely exhausted, we're going to do this one live. So this is on YouTube, this is on X and Twitter, and this will be on your feeds and Spotify, Apple, and all those places. So I am Vlad Sedler, and I am joined today by my colleague and podcast partner, Booms, Jason Anthony. What's up, Jay?
Booms in the gut, or gut in the booms, live on live streaming. The first time for us doing this, Vlad, it's exciting to do a pod on YouTube, and hopefully don't make any too many blunders that you can't edit out. So, you know, I got to be a professional today, so I got to get my game face on.
Yeah, everything changes when it's live and in person. I got to dial down the dad jokes. You know, I can't take those out. Whatever. We come at it raw. This is who we are. We're going to give you our best. We got a lot of things to talk about, obviously, about a week into the season, and it's crazy. The small sample size. It's the first time I've ever wanted to mute a word. It's the beginning of everybody's post or tweet. But it is the reality, right? Like, this is that time of season where no matter what, it's human nature. We're going to be overreacting to things and have that FOMO, players we don't have, and everything is accentuated. This is the time of year, and those that have been playing for a while, or you know, do things like this, you know, the stock market, or just are aware of these type of things, know not to overreact or to go too crazy.
The victory laps are tiring. Just trying to keep up with them all. I mean, we're 1 week in. You see the Paul Skeens, you know, fading him. He was my SP 20 or whatever that is. Struggling with that. You know, I had Crochet over Skeens in my rankings, but I definitely didn't have Skeens below number three. I actually took him in my last main. It's 1 week. We're seven days in. I don't know how anybody can be excited about a sample size of work. I don't, you know, injuries, you know, I said, I told you so, all that fun stuff. You know, obviously, if you're right on players, that confirmation bias is a lot of fun, but it's the guys that are struggling or injured that I see the victory laps on that I kind of roll my eyes to a point where my wife's even questioning why I'm rolling my eyes so much.
Are you proud of me? No victory laps this year so far, because there's nothing to lap, right? It's a week into the season, little victories here and there. I mean, for example, like I'm going to be early this past Sunday on a main event, I decided that I was going to play Andrew Painter against the Nationals over Michael King at Boston. Of course, King can still outperform him, but either way, for me, this kind of looks like a little bit of an early victory. And I know that's maybe not the kind of thing some people might be like, oh, well, he's my SP3, and he had such a great first start. Like, that's kind of, you know, ballsy. But I guess depending on type of roster you have, you could get away with those kind of things, but it's not necessarily advisable, like, you know, all throughout the season. Am I crazy?
I would be victory lapping that rotation if you have those options to bench Michael King between Andrew Painter. I mean, Andrew Painter moved up to like an SP5 or 6 into draft season. He looked really good. I wish he's a little FOMO guy. Obviously, it's a long season, but really liked him and didn't follow the price up. I mean, Vlad, I think you're due a victory lap with your Angels bullpen handling from our main event, don't you? We can kind of give you a little kudos for that so far, at least. You know, it's a weekend, but, you know, you handled that perfectly for putting some capital into a guy who got injured quickly.
Yeah, so I have a main event. So, let's talk a little bit about the mains in Vegas and how everything went. So I just did two main events this year. Not just it, but hey, listen to it. It's good. I did one in Vegas live where I had the 14 pick, and then I did one online the night before the season when I was home. It was crazy. It was a 9 p.m. Pacific time, and it was a loaded room. And in my main event in Vegas, I was really getting everybody I wanted for the most part. Like my targets, I was getting them. And in the other one online, I was getting shellacked. It was third, fourth options, and again, 1 week means nothing, but the team that I really like, it's off to a good start. It's been first, second overall. And the other one is like dead last, and they're both decent rosters, but I definitely have a preference on one. But But in my main event roster in Vegas, there was one thing that I was for sure knew that I was going to do, is that I was not going to go into it with the closer hype and take Mason Miller or Edwin Diaz with my second round pick. I mapped the whole draft out how I would want it, like per position. And I kind of realized I was going to shop with my first closer in like the round 5, 6, 7 range with like a Iglesias or a Jeff Hoffman. And then I would go after a couple of targets later. So what I did there is I got Jeff Hoffman in the 6th. I got Paul Sewald several rounds later, I think 8, 19, 20, something like that. And then I took Kirby Yates. I actually took Yates in the 14th. And what I did was, you're talking about Jordan Romano, is, you know, looked like he had a good spring. I know, you know, some people were posting on Twitter that, you know, that this is happening. Like Yates hadn't been actually officially named the closer, and he was available in my league in Fab. So I put him in the Fab article. I bid within my range, and I got him for 12 with a backup of 1. And this is, you know, of course, before the season started. And it's nice. It's worked out. I know a lot of people, you know, Dr. Dave, a lot of Silver, a lot of people have lots of Romano shares. They were targeting him. But in that case, I do feel like I got a little lucky so far.
Hey, you make your own luck, right? I'm Scott Ginstead texted me, said, man, in our shared main we're doing with Matt Modica, Romano went for 23. So, man, that's a good price. And I think my exact response was, you could not pay me $23 in Fab to roster Jordan Romano this year. But, you know, we had this with, I believe, Luke Jackson last year on the Rangers. And those 10, 12, 15 saves, however many Romano ends up getting this year, it could be 30 for all we know, right? But those are gold, especially off the Fab where these guys were drafting him 29, 30. These saves are so valuable. So just run with it and enjoy it while you got it. And hopefully it lasts. And, you know, for everybody that's listening or watching, that if they don't know, Vlad and I were lucky enough to get paired in the same main event league in Vegas. I was drafting 9 and I believe Vlad is 14, and his draft did fall very good. Every pick he had, I kind of knew who was coming. And those are the fun drafts that you kind of just kind of, it almost drafts itself. You don't need to make many hard decisions. But yeah, I was at the 9 pick and kind of got bamboozled by Jackson Churio's injury in the WBC, that he decided to play with a fractured hand after it. So kind of chasing my tail. I was already short in outfield in that league. I sacrificed my outfielder 4 for Connolly early, which I'm really happy with that selection. Yeah. But I am really struggling in outfield, so I'm going to have to really fab that throughout the year. But, you know, 1 week in, a lot of good stuff and some bad stuff, you know, mainly the man named Bo Bichette is breaking my heart for every other year. Now I tend to go in on him, and now he looks terrible again. So hopefully he turns that around.
Yeah, I read something today. His bat speed's down 3 miles per hour or something. It's really early. Like, unless Bo Bichette is injured and is hiding something, or I don't know. We haven't seen anything happen in the games. It's, you know, new team, new league. He'll get there. He'll get adjusted. Mets fans are very unforgiving. I know that he's already been booed there, and he himself said that he deserves it. And it's Bo Bichette. I mean, he didn't even play a full season last year, missed like 20 some odd games, and was still, I think, like tied for 2nd in the majors in hits. So that's a great offense. By the way, if you did check out the FTN or our staff picks that Jason and I were a part of, I did not pick the Dodgers to win the World Series. I actually picked the New York Mets. So I am really big on the Mets this year.
There's some big vibes coming on from Vlad in LA down there, pick against his Dodgers. You know, I do need to take a little victory lap early. And Mr. Ginstead actually hopped on the chat and he said, daily victory laps for Willier are a must. Just facts. So I agree. Super excited about Willier. I have him in 80% of my leagues. Yeah. He was my biggest target of the year. It could blow up in my face, but so far, so good. Really, really excited about that. So I just got to round it out with him now.
By the way, I was preparing for an article. I was looking at last year's major league leaders, statistical leaders through the first week of the season. And I didn't even realize this. Willie Abreu was at the top of everything. I think he was hitting like 450 with like a few home runs. He had a really, really hot week. It'll be interesting to see as they start to play lefties, how will he manage them? Will he continue to play against them? But he really does look like a full-on breakout. And I definitely could say that I liked Willie Abreu, but not until kind of and other, you know, Sharp. I mean, nobody that I know loved Willie Abreu as much as you going into this season. But you definitely kind of, you know, got that Abreu kind of flavor on me for sure.
It was definitely sad when I didn't get him in the main with Scott, team six or team eight. Yeah. On Thursday, picked him right in front of us. That was Todd Whitestone and James Anderson took him in round 12, and we had him queued up and just looked at him and shook my head. Mm-hmm. How dare you? But that got us a Sugar Shane McClanahan share, so yep. It wasn't the worst thing. So excited about that. Any FOMOs from your main event drafts that so far 7 days in?
I mean, I have serious Connor Griffin FOMO because I've been a huge cheerleader. You know, we've discussed it on the pod. I thought he'd start the season with the team. And I've got him on a bunch of gladiators, some DCs. I got him in an OC, but I did not get him in the main events. And, you know, I was tweeting by the dip and, you know, DC made fun of me. He goes, "Hey, where you showed your main roster. Where's your Griffin share?" And hey, that's fair. I should have maybe prioritized them, but like now when it matters and I went and looked at my shares, like, man, I got like seven Griffins, but not in the right places, like not as much as I wanted to. So I think he is one. And then Austin Riley is another. So in the two main events, I did not get Austin Riley. He's obviously not off to a great start, but if you read this year's Yelich, you know, he was the essential runner up and somebody that I was highly targeting. The Braves offense in general, just wanted to get as many pieces of that offensive pie. Really wanted to get an early pick so that I can get an Acuna. I have three draft champions that just went, you know, balls out with Acuna, Buxton, and Luis Robert Jr. So I got those three on two teams, and or even three, actually. I got that trio, and it's, you know, it's wild, it's dangerous, but I wanted to take that shot.
Well, I think that makes sense to do at least in a couple of leagues, right? You got to have some fun with that.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff today. First topic wanted to talk about is just early season reactions, sample size, how we approach things with what's going on early in the season. And, you know, it's you look at leaderboards, it's Joey Weimer, by the way. And by the way, I made now stupid jokes online. You know, it's not a matter of Weimer, but Wenmer. And obviously that's horrible. But also, it's especially horrible because he's pronounced actually Weimer. So
I tried to talk you out of it, Vlad. You did it anyways.
Yeah. But he's off to a tremendous start. How, you know, the NFBC market, pretty sharp. You always have somebody's going to go triple digits on him, especially as it has a great weekend. But a player like that is intriguing to me. Like, I'm looking at Kyron Paris last year. I talked about him or wrote about him in Gut Feelings last year. He was like a short side platoon guy in the first week of the weekend of the season. There was a lot of hype on him, stole three bases, hit a home run. And then he went for like a relatively decent FAB. It was like $43, but then it was all the hype picked up in every Yahoo, CBS league, you know, you can imagine, and hit two home runs and on like the Wednesday, Thursday that he was added and then just gone, just poof like that, disappeared. And that same week, this is like week two of FAB, Zach Veen was getting ready to be called up because he had an incredibly hot weekend in the minors. And it's like on Sunday it was, oh, Veen's about to be called up. So, hey, let's roll out the truck, the Fab Dollars truck. And he went for an average bid of 122. He did basically nothing. And, you know, we know what's happened there. By the way, Zach Veen on a rehab assignment, if you're interested for this year.
Too soon. I'm pretty sure in our shared league last year, I outbid you for Zach Veen and you messaged me about it. So that did not work out too well for me. But yeah, I mean, it's you got to take these shots on guys, especially being able to pick up a guy that can impact you all year. Unfortunately, most of these guys that look like they're going to break out, whether it's playing time or skills, do not. But a lot of luck involved, a lot of skill. You know, I remember Reese Hines a couple of years ago was that same guy that, you know, was going to go nuts and then $100 bids and just nothing. And so, you know, it's you got it. Weimer, he looked great, but, you know, you got to be careful about paying for past stats rather than future stats in FAB. Mm-hmm. Speaking of FAB, were you a little surprised at the spend the first weekend? in your leagues. I definitely thought it was high. The Jake Bowers, the David Hamiltons. I really like both of them, both on the Brewers, randomly enough. But I was really not in the ballpark, and I was even in the low 30s for Bowers. So were you surprised at the cost week one, or is that just everybody has money?
I'm usually not surprised if there's a lot of spending going on early in the season. I think outside of closers, like 12 teamers were Lucas Ursek, it wasn't even the closer at the time, was available, or Jordan Romano. There weren't any crazy standout hitters, I recall. And so, yeah, Jake Bowers was popping up towards the top of the list. And I think he had an average winning bid of somewhere in the 50s. In our main event, I got him for 37. And listen, Andrew Vaughn's going to be back at some point. I don't think the Jake Bowers thing will happen for a really long time. But listen, it's a nice couple of weeks. David Hamilton might be a little different. I think he's going to continue to be a platoon guy. I don't think he's going to hit against lefties, but he's one of the fastest players in the league, one of the best at stealing bases. The Brewers love to run. I think anyone that picked him up really got a good one. But like the tale with Weimer in that example, and what I wrote about was, I want to be open-minded more, because I think that's smarter and better with Fab. Like, I don't want to say, oh, Jordan Romano screwed me last year because he had an 8 ERA. And these closers, a lot of times they reinvent themselves. Like Kirby Yates was kind of out of the picture, then came up, had that big season with the Rangers. Griffin Jacks was one of the top five setup man in baseball for like 3 years running, and then had a horrific, he's didn't have a very good year last year. And then so far this year, he's got like a 22.5 ERA. And sometimes you see that velo up, things are back to normal. Paul Sewald's a good example of that so far. I used to never touch Sewald. I'd want nothing to do with him. And this year I'm like, keep an open mind. Lavolo likes him and velo is up. Like there's really no one else there. Let's pounce on it. With Weimer specifically, I'm looking at, it's a one-year sample for him. He's been pretty much out of the big leagues the last couple of years. And looking at that 2023 season and what he did in the minors, he is a double-digit home run stolen base guy. But he hit 200 in his rookie year with like 500 plate appearances and really crazy splits against lefties and righties. Like he is a short side platoon guy. And it, to me, it's really just a matter of time before that happens again. So for me, like I don't care what he does this weekend. I'm not willing to spend $40, $50, $100 for his services.
Yeah. I mean, you can't change the stripes on a zebra. Obviously skills improvement happens at different times in people's careers, but at some point it's just a hot stretch of a week of baseball, similar to a cold week for all the stars. I saw the stats from the first round players, and almost every single first round player seems to be struggling so far. So it's just, again, it's a lot of overreaction, but I definitely understand people getting excited about Weimer and the opportunity. I thought Jacob Young would be their everyday center fielder. I actually drafted him and picked him up in multiple places for the speed. But they have Weimer playing against righties now to give him a shot. A lot of times you need that shot to not be a short side platoon, right? You just need the opportunity because everybody's a platoon guy until they're not. So I'm in the same boat as you as far as I won't be bidding on him. But I understand the cost benefit analysis behind bidding on him.
Yeah. And I mean, the Nationals have played a lot of lefties lately, or at least in the first week. I mean, it's or three games against lefties, three against starting righties. And Jacob Young's been playing, like he's been in the lineup against those lefties every day. Joey Weimer started off as, he's just going to be a short side platoon guy. Now he's playing against both lefties and righties, and that's just sort of the depth of that bench. Maybe at some point Dylan Cruz comes back and gets in that picture. I just saw that he's hitting like 140 through the first week. So he's really struggling, but yeah, I mean, listen, enough about Joey Weimer. Anything else just as far as like how you respond bidding wise, like dumping somebody quickly? Are you more aggressive early in the year? Are you cautious? Is it a balance? Like, how do you manage?
Well, Dylan Cruz is now a target. He's breaking out. He's improved on his spring training numbers going up to 140. Early in the year, hitting wise, I'm much more patient than pitching wise. If I don't like a situation or velocity or something, I'll be much quicker to drop a pitcher. Hitting wise, it's kind of back of the baseball card. You know, we always say this middle of the year, if a guy slumps for 2-3 weeks, it's fine. But early in the year, the sky is falling. So most of it in my decisions are based off of playing time and situation. Good example, I had a lot of shares of Ian Seymour. I really thought he was going to be the next starting pitcher up in Tampa Bay. He destroyed my ratios in the first start of the year or bullpen start of the year, but now he's pitching one inning out of the bullpen. So not only did he hurt me there, but now he doesn't have an opportunity to be that piggyback starter on the Nick Martinez or you know, the other short arms there. So yeah, that's a good example for me. The thing we forget every year is that there's no pitching available on Fab. You go through the Fab lease, especially early. Oh my God. Gosh, it's ugly. And you're just searching for guys. I actually stashed quite a few River Ryans last week with the hope that, no offense, your boy Sasaki couldn't figure it out, or, you know, Emmett Sheehan or something wrong, because he's one injury away to being a main piece of that Dodgers rotation. So for me, early in the year, it's a lot more stashes. And then if there is a skills growth, if there's an opportunity that presents itself to kind of bid on. But I'm really not trying to churn my roster tremendously unless there's just some bad draft picks.
By the way, speaking of Sasaki, in the FSGA Experts League, I had Joe Rico, our colleague, join me, and I couldn't make the draft. So he drafted it. And I said, you know, listen, you be the primary for managing the team. So he really loves Ryne Nelson. And I remember I set the lineup this week because he wasn't around, and I put Sasaki in there, like, for the two start, like, let's just go for it. I know it's kind of dicey. And I go in to go, you know, see the stats. I'm like, he put in Ryne Nelson. He put in his boy. Sasaki, you know, honestly, personal bias aside, there's something. I remember before he came here, there was like, he's got that like Kobe mindset and all that. Like all the interviews, everything I read, like he is kind of like a mess. He's like emotionally, mentally a mess. And I think it's been a real struggle for him. And listen, even though that first start, it wasn't great, but it also wasn't bad. And I don't know what we're going to expect week to week. And I think a guy like River Ryan does make sense, because I think we might be sometimes blinded by, oh, the Dodgers guy, oh, Robleski. But Robleski is really, he's not that great. I don't think he's that good. River Ryan is very talented. He's dynamite. Like, that's the kind of stash I would want in a 15-teamer.
Yeah, and the crazy part about Dodgers pitchers, you know, you saw the stats for the last 2 years. They just don't get wins. I think it was, 52 and 51 wins, like, the last 2 years from their starting pitchers. And that's off a 92-win team and a 100-win team the last 2 years. So a lot of it, you know, not a lot of expectations from those Dodger pitchers, because they don't go deep into games. They are careful with them. They don't need to push their pitchers because of the depth of their offense, the depth of their starters. But you know, you're looking for lightning in a bottle right now. It is very challenging when you're going through these fabs and you're trying to find something, whether it's a stash or, you know, or skills growth or whatever it is. But, you know, dropping a starting pitcher because they struggle is a scary game this type of year, because you drafted them for a reason, right? You drafted them because you did your research and you liked them. If they're pitching, I would recommend holding on at least until you get a big enough sample size to make that educated decision rather than emotional drop. We'll call it the rage drop.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why it's important, I think, in NFBC and the overall contests to make sure that you have the starting pitching depth, because then you start digging into Fab right away. And if you're looking now at sub 50% rostered options, it's like, oh, okay, Adrian Hauser. That's what I'm looking at. Oh, he's against the Phillies and out Baltimore. Okay. All right. I'm taking a risk, but I need a pitcher. So you start to get a little bit into in that pickle. Let me ask you about like metrics. I know you're obviously, you have your own model, you do your own work and stats, but are you looking at underlying metrics at all? Cause like everything is blown up and nothing is kind of is there, but I mean, does a barrel rate in the first week matter to you? Like, what are you looking at here early on? Or are you not looking at all?
Now, early on, it's still playing time. The skills, like I said, haven't got enough chance to regulate. I am working hard this year to look more often at these underlying metrics, especially for guys on my team. I'm very guilty of being a week late to bench a guy or a week late to drop a guy. And it craters me thinking that this guy's actually been okay. So I'm really looking at those underlying metrics like barrel percentage, Sierra for pitchers, you know, K minus walk or CSW. You know, obviously the big one on Savant is XW or Wade Woba. XWOBA. And that's something I haven't looked at in the past. So I'm starting to look into that. And then, you know, using these other systems that have weekly projections, season long projections, and just kind of getting my own emotional biases out of it and trying to use more, you know, we'll go being more robotish, as our buddy Phil does. And just, there's no emotional connection. And then I know you are an emotional player in a good way, that you use this emotion to harness your pickups and thoughts. But I think it hurts me more than it helps me.
Yeah. And by the way, I don't know if it's still the case, but it was, what was it? Drake Baldwin. He's hitting 318 and has a 352 expected batting average. He's got a 507 WOBA and a 520 expected WOBA. So, I mean, listen, it's just a funny thing. It doesn't mean really anything. You could say, oh, he's been unlucky. But the fact of the matter is, if he's hitting, you know, that well, and he's got like a, what is it? That's why he's unlucky. Yeah, I see. A 235 BABIP. Okay. Anyways, Drake Baldwin's good. That's the end of that story. Yeah. Anything else on this topic as far as, you know, confirmation bias, recency bias? I do think it's funny how a lot of our reactions early in the year is based on who's on our rosters, right? Like, you know, this guy's doing well. Yes, I got it. Or, you know, oh man, I missed this target. I missed this player. All that. It's so accentuated and just electrified early in the year.
It's more just fun, right? With the recency bias or confirmation bias. It's just fun to feel like you're right, even though you're not right on a guy a week in, right? You know, whether it's Willier or Romano or, you know, Zach Wheeler's got a bunch of good news. You know, I'm excited about him. You know, one setback, it could be a terrible pick. So a lot of it is just, hey, I did the research. It looks like I'm right. It's fun to start in a good spot rather than chasing it and having more FOMO than confirmation bias, right? It's just human nature. And then, you know, stupid as it is, opening the NFBC page and seeing your team in first place, it's just like, oh, that's nice. It's just that little subtle, like little jolt for you. But long, long season, we're just getting started, right? And the grind is real.
Exactly. It 100% is. It's only getting started. Many, many more weeks to go. For those that are not subscribed, you should check us out, ftnfantasy.com. We've got a lot of really awesome content for you in season. You got Lucas Beery's managing the drops and disasters article on the weekend, telling you to start, which starting pitchers to avoid. NFBC Hall of Famer Mike Mager, he's got a weekly strategy column. We've got Joe Rico, Adam Young handling waivers for all your shallower leagues. And then, of course, Dan Thompson on the bullpen. I've got the Fab on the weekend. I usually start that process on Friday. I have data tables that are up that you could already start to see what the bid ranges are, and we change them throughout the weekend. I go ahead and update them based on what's going on. And then projections. We've got really cool projections customized that you can use for your specific league setup. If you play like on underdog dailies, you can set those projections for that setting. I actually used it, tested it out the other day, made a few bucks. And we do those lineups by hand. So we're projecting doing those lineups. And by the way, might as well announce it. If you know Kevin Hastings, he's going to be joining the team here. He's going to be helping out with our lineups and projection system process. So Kevin's going to come on board and help us out. So really looking forward to having him on the podcast here at some point. He has his own pod on the wire that you should check out. That's specifically a Fab pod. MLB 26, use that promo code. I think the Judge promo code works as well. NFBC redesign. Have you seen all the outrage on that?
Yeah, people really like change, don't they? It's just, you know, obviously anytime there's change, you know, we all spend a lot of time on the website. We all spend a lot of time learning how to navigate the website. And when it changes, it's frustrating because it's not middle of the season, but we're in season already. I wish they did it before the draft to kind of get it, that they probably didn't want to mess up the draft software because that's their bread and butter. you know, there's going to be some tweaks that make it better. I think the feedback, as long as we make it positive for them, they'll do everything they can to help us out as players. You know, off the top, I don't love it, but again, I was so used to the old one. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, though, from seeing some of the posts from NFBC, they're trying to make it more app friendly. So they're moving back towards, you know, we're not in, you know, 2002, we're in 2026. So hopefully we have an app that works here in the next couple of years to go with the website. But there was definitely some entertaining comments going on Twitter, the X machine going up when that happened.
Yeah. And they actually did add the light feature, right? Because as soon as the redesign went live, it was all in dark mode. And some people prefer dark, some people hate dark. So you can make that switch from dark to light. Honestly, that's the one thing I kind of roll with the punches when it comes to UI and UX. It's just, it is what it is. Like, I know I'm playing on NFBC. I could waste my time complaining about it. I'm sure in some cases for people that it matters to, and it does matter, you let Greg or the team know, and they'll work to make things better. So, you know, I do see the little beta tag on there, so it's going to be a work in progress, but yeah, I'm all for kind of moving forward, and it is what it is. There's a lot of crazy sites out there, right? A lot of weird sites. Some people like Fantrax, others hate it. Some people, you know, ESPN, Yahoo, but the commonality is we love complaining about all these websites and all their designs.
Only thing I want is an app. And I know we can use the website, it's functional, but we're in 2026. Let's get an app that works, that's functional, that we can kind of go to one spot rather than have to navigate through my browser on my phone.
Yeah, Adam here says CBS and NFC both updated on the same day. Definitely a shock. And yes, dark mode, much easier on the eyes, but not for everyone. A lot of people do like the light mode. I've actually been dark mode for the last 2 years, and then I just switched up light just to kind of, you know, switch it up a little bit. But enough of that about that and our dark light preferences. Some news, big news here. Connor Griffin is going to be playing for the Pirates right away. He is being promoted. He signed a nine-year deal. Still some of the details working out. $140 million, and he's ready to go. What kind of expectations do you have for him if you were to kind of put a line on it for him, a stat line?
Honestly, I don't know. You know, is he 20 yet or is he still 19?
No, he's like the first player in 7 years who's under 20 and making such a contract.
Baseball is so hard. Major league pitchers are so good. We saw in spring training how he struggled, and that was not the cream de la cream of the pitchers. That being said, the power is legit. The speed is legit. The guy is mature beyond his years. But I am not going to be surprised at all if there's some significant struggles. I mean, there was a guy named Mike Trout that got sent back down when he first got called up. He was pretty good at one point, and he looks pretty good now. That's beyond the point. But, you know, you look at the Kevin McGonigal, the J.J. Weatherholt, and these guys that went to college and are, you know, a little older, a little more seasoned. How do you think Connor Griffin's going to compare to them? Because they look like they belong immediately versus Griffin that, you know, he's 19 years old, basically just graduated high school, just went to his prom a couple of years ago. So where are you at? Because I have no idea what to think. I have one share, got him in a kind of an auction of not a FOMO, but, you know, I was reading an article about him negotiating. So I was excited to get one share, but that was it. Because I was kind of fading him, you know, per our conversations the entire offseason.
Yeah, I think he's incredibly special. I think he's and I hate using the term generational talent because we have a few of those guys per generation, I guess, which is what, in approximately 20 years. But I think he's going to make an immediate impact. And I don't mean like just in the first week or in the first game or whatever. I think this first season, you're going to probably have a lower, I think batting average is the category that's really going to hurt. But I think he's going to truly infuse this Pirates lineup. And you're going from somebody like a Jared Triolo or a Nick Gonzalez or whoever, and you're inserting somebody of this level and magnitude, even at his age. Like, he's one of those like all baseball all the time, mature, like, you know, he was born for this. I think you're going to have some batting average struggles. You'll have a couple of weeks, everybody's just, you know, talking it down. Oh, he's about to be sent to the minors. but I think he's going to rack up those stats. I think he's going to hit like 20-ish home runs. I think he's going to steal 35 plus bases, get a, you know, score a bunch of runs. You know, put him in the middle of that lineup. It's a huge help. The Pirates that they've added, Brandon Lau and Ryan O'Hearn, they're off to nice starts. Brian Reynolds is coming around, starting to hit some homers. Maybe somebody will wake Marcell Ozuna up. But it now Pirates fans are alive. Like, oh, you know, we were already maybe on the bubble of making the possibly being a playoff team. Now the picture comes a little bit more clear. So I'm a huge fan. I'm got FOMO because I don't have all the shares.
Yeah, yeah, he's going to be the ultimate FOMO guy if you don't have him, because he's going to be so much fun to watch. The Pirates are becoming sneakily a must watch, and not because of O'Neill Cruz's defensive issues in center field. Their rotation is legit, and their future rotation is legit. You know, Braxton Ashcraft looks really good. You know, not to mention Bubba Chandler was cruising until he couldn't stop walking people. He's got an electric arm. Paul Skeens, obviously. But this team is fun, and I give the Pirates a lot of credit for getting this deal done. I give, you know, Connor Griffin got paid. We never know if it's under market. I mean, it usually is when these guys are that good, but he just generational wealth now. He just secured his family's future, so I give him a lot of credit for doing that. But the Pirates now, when they're on TV, guess what? We're flipping on because we're going to watch, and you know, they're going to be, I have tickets actually, Giants Pirates here later in the month. So I'm excited for that now. Randomly came to me.
No, you should see the prices, the prices, how they've gone up for the Pirates games this weekend. Oh man. Yeah. Whatever the next games are.
The home opener's Friday.
Yeah. Yeah. It's those prices are soaring. Kind of like my Yoshi up there, if you see him. That's the Yoshi from Mario, and obviously Yoshinobu Yamamoto. I went to the game on Tuesday with Chef Mike, and you know, thanks to Jeff Biddle, the man, hooked up tickets, really good seats, and we came there 2 hours before to get that Yoshi. And before we even walked to our seats, somebody was like, "Oh, these are already selling for $250 on eBay." It's crazy. But I'm gonna keep my Yoshi. I gave it to the kids; they loved it.
Yeah, I saw you really in the nosebleeds for that game.
Yeah, it's about the food, really. It's just, you know, but some people are very gluttonous in that section. Like, I see people stacking up boxes because it's, you know, the buffet, like the free food. Like, it's gross. They're like filling up bags with like everything, piling in like 10 hot dogs in there for home. It's, you know, I took an extra bag of peanuts home and I felt a little bad.
Well, speaking of gluttonous, you know, you're throwing rocks in a glass house there.
Cody Ponce, not the best of news there. Torn ACL, right? And
is it confirmed torn? I saw it was sprained. He was getting an MRI on it, but I know he's going to be out a significant time.
Yeah, I'm not Dr. Dave, so I cannot tell you for a fact.
What, you know, I don't know if even Dr. Dave saw this one coming. He looked like a fish out of water trying to field that ground ball. Not to mention he fell off the mound about four pitches earlier. So really a bummer. He looked like, you know, he really figured it out overseas, came back, was going to be a big part to that Blue Jays rotation. Looked like he was going to be a tremendous value where he was going in drafts. I had zero shares of him, was not fading him by any means. Just like the other guys in that area. But I hate injuries. Hate something like that for someone that works that hard to get back. Hate that for the Blue Jays. So, just a bummer.
He looked really good in the spring, and his numbers were popping, projection models, everything. I mean, he looked like the real deal. And when we were getting him in draft champions in the 300s, month and a half ago, 2 months ago, fast forward to the main event, our live event, I'm looking at, oh, okay, he's got like a 220 ADP, and I kind of like him. I could probably take him at 205. No way. He went like 170, like 11th, 12th round. All the pitchers were getting pushed up, and you had no chance. And sometimes you get lucky like that. That's not the way you want to do it. But obviously a huge bummer for, you know, for Blue Jays fans there. And, they need a fifth starter. Your Savage is slowly working his way back. So hopefully he will be healthy and be able to step in soon.
Yeah, that was an interesting whole news cycle with Yusavage. You know, wants to limit innings, and he came with an impingement in his shoulder, and now he's doing a rehab start. Everything seemed a little fishy. if I wasn't doing a lot of the Wheeler or the Cole, Savage definitely would have been a big target, because it seemed like it was more of a tool, a Dodgers tool kind of thing, that phantom injury to kind of slow him down a little bit. But Hill is going to be back sooner than later. And our boy Casey Moose on here, Mr. Giolotti, Eric Lauer season, he looks good too. I think that's going to be a really undervalued pickup or draft pick, because his skills actually are not they're not smoke and mirrors. He's actually a good pitcher.
Yeah, and he's the lefty there in that rotation, much needed. He was great last year. I feel like interesting that he wasn't as high on the in our minds, because it didn't look like in the beginning of the year that he had a roster spot. Right, they signed Ponce and Cease, and even with Berrios down, there was Max Scherzer that they signed. But yeah, looks really good for him. And by the way, for Cody Ponce, he's visiting, you know, Dr. Elitrosh, and they're going to basically it's see if he needs surgery to repair the sprained right ACL.
Can we talk about Dylan Cease's vibe a little bit? That guy looks like a caveman. He is awesome.
he is.
And since he left the Padres.
He
looked filthy too.
He looked filthy. You can say whatever you want about the damage he did last year. Obviously, he was a bust in a lot of ways with the ratios for the Padres, and kind of a fourth round pick and 15 teamers. But what goes up must come down, and vice versa. I just don't see him as a 4-ish plus ERA guy there. And he's getting you 200-ish innings almost every year and racking up the strikeouts. So this could be he had one really, really big season. This could be another one of those. Other guys on the radar that are hurt, obviously Zach Eflin. He went onto the IL. They called up Albert Suarez. He got a 3-inning save the other day. Andrew Vaughn, we already talked about. Carlos Estevez, that was quite the saga. And those that got the Lucas Erzik shares, congrats.
Yeah, who would have saw that coming? The old ankle injury, throwing 88. They needed a reason to put him on the IL. I saw four teams already dropped him in the main, so that will be interesting, because obviously it's still not an arm injury. What happens when he comes back? Zach Eflin looked amazing before that, and that did not look like a good injury, the way that his velocity dropped and the way he grabbed kind of his arm. Really a bummer for him, coming off a back surgery. Really looked like he was going to be a big part to that Orioles rotation. I had a lot of him in draft champions. His price went up pretty significantly come main event season, so I didn't follow him up, but just another bummer. Like I hate seeing that from a guy that's worked so hard to get back and actually looked really good.
Speaking of coming back, you've got Zach Wheeler looked really good in his first rehab appearance. There were three scoreless frames. He gave up a walk, two hits. He struck out three batters. You expect to see him coming soon to the rotation. No doubt coming for Taiwan Walker. Hope nobody got that damage. And then you've got, what was this? What am I blanking? It's Lodolo, Nick Lodolo. He may or may not make one more rehab start, so he will be back next week. And then Carlos Rodon, just a little bit of information there. He's supposed to be on track for the end of April, but he was doing some running drills and had like a tight hamstring. And so they're evaluating him this weekend to see if that's going to impact him or not. But if it does impact him, it wouldn't be the least bit shocked, because we've been down this road before with him.
Just amazing with all of these, especially pitchers coming back from arm injuries, how much other injuries pop up, leg, you know, whatever, knee, hamstring. It's just, they're trying to ramp up so quick. So, and our boy Anthony with the Estevez does throwing 88. There is some sort of arm problem. It can't be just mechanics when he was throwing 96 last year. I know he got up to 92 in the game, but that's still significant decline. Really excited about Wheeler. I think he's doing another rehab start today, if I'm not mistaken. I would imagine he's doing at least two more, and then they'll see. You know, people are talking about his velocity being down. He's still ramping up. We have no idea how effective he's going to be when he's back. I'm obviously betting on the come on that. Even if he's 80% of Zach Wheeler, that's pretty effective pitcher. Really excited to see what he's doing. And any news on our boy Spencer Strider? I know they said the oblique was not as bad, not that major of an injury, but I have not heard any other thing about timetables or throwing or anything. Have you heard anything?
I haven't. If I'm looking at the RotoWire projected pitchers, they've got him coming back not next week, but the week after for like the series that's at home against the Marlins. So that's week four. So that's what it's looking like at this point. So that's sort of middle of April. So not quite sure exactly when. I haven't heard too much news. On the hitter front, I mean, you know, I know you scoffed when I even put these in the notes, but hey, some of us play in deep leagues, but Tyler Freeman activated short side platoon, Rockies, exciting.
I was excited about him last year. He just didn't get the playing time when they traded for him from Cleveland. Great batting average help, but if we're looking at Tyler Freeman, we probably have an outfield like our main together.
Definitely some issues. Saya Suzuki is on a rehab assignment. He should be back very soon. Obviously, that changes things there with Matt Schaub maybe not playing as frequently, going back to a short side platoon. Wonder what that does with like a Michael Conforto, who is already getting sort of minimal playing time. Von Grissom is this guy just keeps getting screwed organization after organization. I was trying to figure out, like, could he get just sent back to the minors if he's ready? Even though he had a good camp. I mean, you've got Oswald Peraza is playing well there. They've got Adam Frazier on the roster. I hadn't looked at the contract details, but I don't know what they can do. He's obviously past the options age. Yeah. But he, 1 year, $1.75 million. Like, can you just cut him, or do you send Grissom to the minors? I don't know.
I think they have to put him on outright waivers if they do that. And he actually had a pretty good year last year in AAA. He was someone I was interested in draft champions. Hard to believe that the Adam Frazier types would hold him back, but it is the Angels, and who knows what they're going to do. Although they have started off pretty well. Jose Soriano looks like an animal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he looks great. Two scoreless outings, I believe, so far. Last note here, Anthony Volpe expected sometime in early May. Jose Caballero is struggling despite all of his offseason work. Maybe he goes back to a short side platoon, pinch hit kind of guy, or maybe he heats up. We'll see what happens there. Let's touch real quick on hot starts out of the blue. We already talked about Joey Weimer. What about three other guys? And one is just recent, just kind of right on our radars. And that's the rookie for the Arizona Diamondbacks, Jose Fernandez, who hit two bombs in his first major league game. And then Liam Hicks, and then also TJ Rumfield. Any thoughts on those guys, and especially in relation to FAP?
Yeah, I got to do a really deep dive on Fernandez. I did not know enough about him. What I really like is that they actually started him at first base the next game after his two home run game. So multi-position guy. He yacked that ball off of Kinley. I did not like seeing that at all. But he looked pretty good. TJ Rumfield, I actually was trying to get him in FAB this last week, and being starting first baseman for the Rockies is never a bad thing. As long as who was the guy from last year that we all fell in love with that didn't work out. It was great podcasting.
On the Rockets? The Rockies?
Yeah. The first base. Big swing and miss. But yeah, I mean, he's going to get a run. Worst big side platoon. But, Rumfield was someone I was trying to get. And then Liam Hicks looks really good. I know they want to have Augustin Ramirez more DH, so Hicks could get a lot of run, and he can play first and catcher. I was reading his bat speeds up as well.
Yeah, Liam Hicks leading the majors in RBI. He actually had he's one of those guys that just he just hits with runners on base. It was the same thing last year. He had an inordinate amount of like RBI in limited playing time compared to like runs and per plate appearance. So he didn't play all that much, but it was interesting. And he's originally a Rule 5 pick, too. He just kind of kept sticking around, made the team. I mean, he's the cleanup guy right now. He's catcher eligible. He is pretty much just playing against righties right now because the Marlins are doing some heavy platooning stuff. They've got the guys like Austin Slater and Heriberto Hernandez, Javier Sanoja, and they just acquired Leo Jimenez from the Blue Jays. So they have a very strong like lefty righty platoon split thing going on.
I was thinking of Michael Toglia. He was going top 10 rounds last year in the mains.
Busted here.
Busted.
Yeah. And he's on the Reds, by the way, with Christian and Encarnacion Strand, who I don't know if those guys will ever.
The promised one that never was. CES, I loved him.
Yeah. Christian and Encarnacion stranded in the minors. That's my own joke. all right. So we talked on those guys. Jose Fernandez, to me, I want to kind of do a little bit more research. I do find it interesting that he just got a middle of the order lineup spot kind of right away. And he came up because Pavin Smith, he was scratched in the first game of the season for the Diamondbacks, and then he was going to come back, or maybe he did come back for a game and then went on the IL. They needed somebody, and Jose Fernandez has one game in AAA. He was great in AA last year, came up, had that one game in AAA, straight up to the Diamondbacks. So let's see, maybe he sticks around. We'll cover that in FAB this weekend. And then, yeah, TJ Rumphill, we'll mention him a little bit later, but I know some people know that are expecting Charlie Condon to come up at some point. He's kind of their big hitting prospect. I'm sure they'll find a way to get, you know, both those guys in if they have to. But TJ Rumphill was a Yankees prospect, and he's been looking good since the beginning of spring training.
Did you just say the Rockies, I'm sure they're going to do the right thing by a prospect?
No.
Are you okay?
Edit. some hot starts that are not all that shocking. You got Shea Langeliers. Amazing. I know so many people are on Bengaliers, and you've been on them forever. I know Toby G is doing like a 50 home run hunt. He like wants to wash out Cal Raleigh from the record books immediately, huh?
I don't think we're seeing a 60 homer season coming up from Langeliers, but he looks good. You know, just continues to drop the strikeout rate, continues to hit the ball hard. Hasn't even played in Sacramento yet. Hasn't heated up. So, excited about that start for Langeliers. I diversified a little too much at the end with some Ben Rice and some William Contreras, but have a lot of Langeliers. Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking FOMO at the beginning of the show, and the next guy on our list is probably my ultimate FOMO guy, who I really had high in my rankings and I never got any, whether the auctions or the snake, was Sal Stewart. He looks the real deal. I was hoping his draft cost kind of leveled out because the playing time concerns, but he's going to play every day and just mash as long as he doesn't break his wrist playing first base, getting hit by line drives.
Yeah, no, Sal Stewart is like not just good. He looks like every part of like he's a rookie. He's already a team leader. Everybody wants the quotes from him. He's like pumping the team up. He's like a not strange Tristan Casas, basically. So it's.
Don't insult the guy.
But yeah, you know, just like vibes. But like, but by the way, Tristan Casas, he's been shut down with an intercostal strain, so you know, that whole thing continues.
He done.
Yeah, not looking good. I was going to look up the Stewart helium and his ADP from the last week of drafts, but we know it got high. It got into like the 140s. It was pretty high. Jordan Alvarez, buddy, just stay healthy. And you could do big things. That's a guy I wanted to mention who was a big FOMO of mine because got him on some OCs, got him as wherever I could. But in neither of my mains was I in a position to get him. There was maybe one where I had pick 43 in hours. And I think Dusty Wagner took him like early, obviously, you know, he's an Astros fan. But would you have taken him there in the third before me?
I looked at him. Yeah, I mean, Dusty took Yordan over Schwarber, which shocked me, but he is an Astros fan. It was definitely – I was probably going pitcher there, but couldn't pass on Schwarber. But yeah. Yordan looks good. He looks healthy. I do worry that they're playing him in the field a lot, so that would be my only concern because those knees are aching, boy. You know, they always are. But he is a true MVP hitter when he's healthy because Astros need him because they look a little bit on the long in the tooth side right now.
Yep. And they play mostly lefties too so far. And he's got one game. Like he personally asked to play more in the outfield and Astros are trying not to do it, but he's DH mostly, played one game in the outfield, but it'd be nice for those that have him if he can get that outfield eligibility, but it comes at the expense of him potentially getting hurt, of course. We touched on your boy, Willy Abreu. Anything else you want to say about him or maybe Chase DeLauder?
Chase victory lap DeLauder?
Yeah. I was there. I saw the game. Otani hit him, threw a pitch and bounced off his ankle, and it was crazy.
I've never seen so many screenshots of people's drafts in rounds 18 through 20 than those first weekend of the lottery.
Yeah. Not going to lie, he's on that good main team of mine, and I was, you know, I just was short on outfielder. It wasn't like, oh, I have to get Chase DeLauder here, but
I'm so proud of you, Vlad, not victory lapping. I mean, I feel like a proud dad right now.
Yeah. Like they say, Vince Vaughn says in Swingers, groans up.
Adulting sucks.
All right, let's clear the clean up here with a little bit of a weekend preview, and then we'll touch on a little bit of a quick look at Fab for the following week. Any games or like pitching matchups that stand out from the weekend?
You know, when you got Chase Burns, who was the ultimate kind of faller in the main events, kind of with the concerns going up against Jack Leiter, who looked really good, kind of a FOMO guy, don't have any. That's going to be a lot of fun, and that's on Sunday afternoon, I believe. So that'll be interesting. I think Chase Burns just ride until the wheels fall off. What's over under on innings for him this year?
127.
I was going to say 100. So you got the over pretty easy.
Yeah.
So, he looks electric. So hopefully he can stay healthy too, even though I don't have any, cause he's good for baseball. What, anything else stand out?
You know, the battle of teammates, Max Meyer and Ryan Weathers, that game's going to be on Saturday. These two were on the same team, and now they're going to battle against each other, and that should be a good one, the Marlins and the Yankees.
Nice.
Let me throw this out because it's an interesting one. Someone got offered Chase DeLauder for Dalen Lyle in redraft. Who would you rather have, assuming DeLauder's back tomorrow in the lineup?
I never thought I'd say this about the Guardians, but give me the better offense. give me DeLauder. The Nats are, man, that lineup, it's almost comical when he comes out each day, how bad it is. I think Dalen Lyle's a great hitter, but it's capped, the counting stats with that lineup around him.
Yeah, he's a potential to be a good hitter. DeLauder has potential to be a great one, so I kind of lean into that. And yeah, by the way, I even noticed that the Nationals have been using, if I'm not mistaken, like C.J. Abrams was like hitting sixth, and probably because it's against the lefty or whatever. But manager there is doing some weird stuff in the lineup, you know, playing a lot of Yorbit Vivas. I don't know, man. It's kind of a nasty lineup. It's just like Nazim Nunez or bust over there.
Get those steals, baby.
That's right. So players to bench this weekend, just a quick touch on it. And this is because of lefty righty splits. This is if you play in NFBC, the Cubs are going to face two lefties this weekend. So probably a good idea to sit Moises Ballesteros. And also, especially if Suzuki is back, I don't know if it's going to be this weekend. I didn't quite check. But yeah, you might see a little bit more Matt Shaw. Owen Casey, same thing. He's off to a nice start. He's hitting 350 so far this year. And they're also going to face two lefties and two really good ones, Max Fried and Ryan Weathers. So careful with your Marlins lefties. And then Gavin Sheets, he's going to face Ranger Suarez, who's not off to a good start. And then Connor Early, who's just looked fantastic. I know you've been big on the Early train. You were early on Early.
I love Early. I know Scott Ginstad's big on him too. Just love the opportunity. If all he needed was an opportunity, he earned it in spring training. So fingers crossed he stays healthy and looks good. Funny quick story. We were watching the Giants and the Padres game, my five-year-old son, and Nick Castellanos' experience in left field. He hits it, or a Giants hitter hits it to left center. He tries to catch it, one hops it, and then throws the third base rather than second. Then the runner advances. My son Jackson goes, "Dad, why did he throw it there?" He said, "Because he's Nick Castellanos, future DH forever." He's catching up to the Marcelo Zuna defensive ratings.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. And especially you get older, it gets more difficult, especially when you weren't all that great defensively to begin with. Looking at some intriguing guys in 15 teamers. We already mentioned Joey Weimer. He's just intriguing because I'm just want to know what he does the rest of this weekend. If he stays hot, like what people will bid on him. Liam Hicks, of course, both of those guys are available in over 75% of main events. And then there's another guy, there's a rookie who just signed. I know JP Crawford's coming back, but I wonder when this guy's going to be coming up to the team.
Yeah, Colt Emerson, read an article that they're not going to rush him up, even though they signed him to a big contract. I guess when he comes up, he's going to play third base, and they're going to use Brendan Donovan as kind of a super utility. I can't imagine that Donovan's not going to play every day and kind of displace Cole Young. You know, Donovan can play outfield too. Gold Glover, actually, he's extremely good defender. So Emerson's kind of the lower level of the J.J. Weatherholt, Evan McGonigal, Connor Griffin group, but really good profile. Was really interested in him in the D.C. season before they traded for Donovan. So it's a tough stash, though, because I don't know what the payoff is. Not a lot of speed, not a ton of power, just a good baseball player. So that's going to kind of be a tough one for me.
Yeah, and I think it makes more sense if you have a team that's been lucky with the health and you don't have like a Wheeler, Cole, Rodon stash and like another injury guy or too many platoon guys. So if you have the bench room and you potentially need an upgrade at middle, you know, corner, maybe it could work out. But yeah, I mean, we'll see what he goes for. It may not be all that crazy, but I know people definitely are going to want to stash him. Of course, Jose Fernandez, this could be the bell of the week three fab ball, depending how the rest of the weekend goes. And obviously I'm interested in how he performs, but I'm more interested to see like where is he hitting in the lineup? Is he continuing where he's at? What's the deal with him and Smith? Does anything change when Luis Gurriel is back? Like, you know, is Arenado toast? All these things matter to see if a kid that had a great start. There you go.
I mean, it's nice that we get what, 4 or 5 games with Fernandez to kind of see what's happening with playing time, batting order, where he's playing in the field, and kind of knowing who's going to displace him when he comes back. So should make us a lot more educated going into Sunday.
Yep. And then Lance McCullers, what did you think? I had him on my bid list this weekend. I kept moving him up, then down. You look at the 2 start on paper. I think it was like at Boston and then at in Sacramento. And I was like, you know, if I get him, I can't really start him this week because it's dicey. And he looked incredible. We know he's been a good pitcher when he's healthy, but he's available in 77% of main events. I assume he'll be one of the kind of, especially how this weekend goes. I think that is going to play a big part how he pitches in Sacramento. But the next 3 weeks, he would line up for at Seattle, which, of course, from the perspective of the ballpark, is a good matchup. Then he'll get the Cardinals at home, and then he'll get the Yankees at home. So any thoughts on the Colors?
He looked electric. It's just a matter of how long is he going to stay healthy for, because we know he can pitch. But, man, he was impressive in that start.
All right. Wrapping things up here with some streamers. These are guys available in 12-team NFBCs, less than 50% rostered. Start off with Austin Hayes. He's got 7 games this week. They're going to face 4 lefties, usually plays higher in the lineup and is more effective against them. So I don't mind him.
Yeah, I'm a big Hayes guy. I have him on a bunch of 15 team leagues. You know, this is where I need to get better in the 12 teamers is streaming guys like Austin Hayes. It's where our buddy Brandon Waddell really excels, is just keep rotating, play the non-sexy guys in good matchups and just accumulate stats. Cause at the end of the day, it doesn't matter who's given you, you just need the stats.
Any other 12 team guys on your radar?
Yeah, Maxwell Muncy on the A's, starting to get back to Sacramento. He was someone that Mark Kotze in the preseason was identifying as a breakout. Looked really good so far. Got 7 games at home in week 4 after this week. So, he's an opportunity in the 12-teamers as well.
Yeah, and TJ Rumfeld, they're going to go back they're in Coors this next Monday through Wednesday series. They're going to play 3 at home. They're facing mostly right-handers over the next 2 weeks, or at least the way it lines up right now. So that's somebody to consider on the radar. By the way, here Adam says Grant Taylor getting a start for the White Sox. So he's actually apparently just going to be opening for Sean Burke, I believe. But that's a real, real bummer on Grant Taylor's like overall fantasy value. He'll be good, I'm sure.
Yeah. We were hoping for the Spencer Strider, pitch multiple innings and build up into a starter, but you know, going one inning at a time does not really do much for Grant Taylor, especially if he's not going to be the closer.
We'll just end things here with just one quick tip for the weekend and just for Fab, but and I'll start. Think that you have to look at the playing time, like Jason is saying, like and projecting. Look at, down at the injury list, see who's or in the minors and things like that. Try to figure out how much staying power this player has, because there's no worse feeling than going in on the rookie and the hype of the stats and the big, you know, powerful home runs, exit velocity, and then they cool off like a Kyren Paris in the minors. And to me, I think that's a really big thing. So I'm, you know, though it's important to be aggressive on the right guys, we don't know who all, always those right guys are. We also have to have the patience because we need that Fab and that money for the course of the full season.
Yeah. And for me, it's more limiting your backup bids. You know, you have your first bid, just a guy you like, we'll just say for $28. Don't make your second bid if it's not a guy on the same level for $14. Those dollars add up, especially when the backup bid on that guy is going to be for two. I get caught doing that a lot too, where I bid eight and the backup bid's one. So, you know, every dollar matters throughout the course of a year. And historically, when you're down your quote unquote waterfall, you know, guys four through nine really is doesn't make a difference. So bidding seven, eight, nine on those guys kind of can nip you in the butt if you do that, you know, 10, 15 times throughout the year.
Yeah. And you'll notice a difference there. If you start putting in two, two, one, one at the end of a 10 player waterfall, a lot of times you don't get your top guy, you'll get somebody for a good price and save money.
Yeah, and know your league too, how active they are. You know, you can pay attention for the first two Fab weeks. You might have to go deeper on your Fab list, because the last thing you want is $2 second baseman, and needing a second baseman, you get shut out of all eight because you're bidding $2. So just kind of understand who is in your league, how aggressive the adds and drops are, how many teams are churning their roster, because each league is unique to itself. They're kind of a living organism.
Yes. Well, this was fun for a live pod. We don't promise that we're going to do this all the time. A lot of times it's late at night and we're exhausted, haggard, and you know, just getting it out. But anytime we have an opportunity to do something during the day or we have guests on, we will absolutely do that. So hope you enjoyed it. For Jason Anthony, Mr. Booms himself, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.